Well, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 147 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist, Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, the summer sports season is officially over now, and we're going to recap the state baseball tournament today with a couple of guests. I'll also have a special guest from Coldwell Banker on at the end of the podcast. But leading off is one of the seniors on this year's Ankeny squad, who was a four-year starter for the Hawks. The outfielder batted 263 with eight doubles and 14 RBIs, and he was a second-team all-conference pick for the third consecutive year. He is Kale Boyd. Kale, thanks for joining me. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Well, it's been an amazing four-year run for you guys. You know, has it sunk in yet that your high school career is over?
I think it has, yeah.
Well, it looks like you guys all went out to eat at the Longhorn Steakhouse the other day. Was that kind of a good way to bring some closure to your season?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it definitely was for sure.
Well, you were part of a senior class that won 95 games over the last 4 years. I know you guys didn't accomplish your ultimate goal this season, but you still have to feel awfully good about, you know, everything that you guys accomplished.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we knew we had a special group and, you know, we did some special things. Obviously didn't end the way we wanted, but yeah, overall good 4 years.
Let's break down the state tournament a little bit. You guys opened the tournament on Thursday with a 2-1 victory over Waukee that featured an outstanding pitcher's duel between Brody Brecht and the Warriors' Jackson Wentworth. You know, was that the kind of game that you expected it to be?
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I knew it was going to be low scoring. I didn't think it was going to be that low scoring. But, yeah, I mean, we knew there wasn't going to be many hits, probably not a lot of action in the field. Just had to kind of get it done at the plate.
Well, you guys took a 1-0 lead on an RBI single by Ryan Crandall in the first inning, but Waukee got its only hit of the game in the third inning and scratched across a run to tie it up. And then in the fourth, you guys loaded the bases with help from a Waukee error, and with one out, you singled to left field to drive in Colin Riggs with what proved to be the winning run. I know you told me afterwards that you were looking for a slider or change up low and away in the zone. You know, could you tell right away that, you know, that your hit was going to fall in?
I could, yeah. I mean, I knew it wasn't hit very hard, but I mean, I knew it was kind of going over the shortstop's head, and as soon as it dropped, I knew it was going to score at least one.
Yeah, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Wentworth finished with 11 strikeouts and scattered eight hits. You had one of those strikeouts in your first at-bat. You know, what was making him so effective that day?
I mean, all of his stuff was on. I mean, not just his fastball, but his slider, his changeup, his curveball. And especially with a guy like that that can, I mean, locate at a high level, it makes it pretty tough to hit.
Well, after your big hit, you know, were you confident with the way that Brody was pitching that the 2-1 lead would hold up?
Definitely, yeah. He was on, his stuff was on, and I was pretty confident he was going to get the job done.
Well, things got a little hairy there in the seventh inning after Brody reached his pitch limit, and you guys had to go to the bullpen. Easton Dunwoody came in, but Waukee was able to get a couple runners on base with one out, and then Weston Folt came in and got a big strikeout of Jacob Barton for the second out. And then Wentworth flied out to you in right field to end the game. You know, that had to feel good to make the catch, especially because, you know, that play kind of turned into an adventure for you, didn't it?
Yeah.
What happened on that play?
So, I mean, I kind of took a bad read on the ball at first, and then I looked back up. Ball was way behind me, kind of, you know, got my footing again, ran back. And then at that point, I was, like, the heart was racing a little bit. So, I mean, I knew I just had to make the catch, and, you know, it's something I do every day, so.
You looked pretty relieved out there when you caught the ball. You just kind of laid in the grass, didn't you? Or
yeah.
The turf, but
yeah, a little bit of a heart attack.
Now that field obviously was an adjustment for you guys. You haven't played over there before. I mean, was that much of an adjustment to that field?
Yeah, I mean, it was a new field. It was turf, obviously. I mean, we were getting ready for it the weeks leading up and practice by going over to the football field and practicing on the turf. But I mean, it was nothing really new for us.
Well, going into the semifinals on a Friday night, you know, I'm sure you guys were excited to get the opportunity to play Johnston, of course, which had defeated you in last year's title game, and then the quarterfinals in 2019. You know, you had Weston ready to go on the mound, and you guys were riding a 19-game winning streak. You know, I'm sure you had all the confidence in the world that you guys were going to win, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had confidence in Weston, so we figured he'd get the job done.
Well, unfortunately, you guys ran into a buzzsaw in Johnston left-hander Jake Pemble. He tossed a four-hitter and had 12 strikeouts in the Dragons' 5-0 victory. You know, he didn't throw that hard, but, you know, he was certainly effective. You struck out and flied out to left in your two plate appearances. You know, was it just his ability to change speeds that made him so effective?
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, when pitchers have, I mean, good off-speed pitches, curveballs, changeups, you know, whatever it is, I mean, obviously that makes it a little bit more tough, and especially when they can, you know, locate effectively, that makes it a little bit more tough too.
Well, this was the first and only time all season that you guys were held scoreless. You know, I don't think anybody saw that coming. You know, do you think it's going to take a while for you to get over the loss, or have you kind of already put it in your rearview mirror?
I think it's going to take a little bit. I mean, I still don't think I've gotten over it. I'm still reminiscing a little bit, and it might take a little bit.
Well, Johnston seemed to have, you know, all the momentum in the world then going into Saturday's championship game. But, of course, the Dragons were unable to defend their title. They dropped a 14-5 decision to top-ranked Pleasant Valley. Were you surprised by that outcome?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I knew Pleasant Valley could hit from the start, and I wasn't sure what pitching Johnston had left or Pleasant Valley. But, definitely surprised.
Well, Kale, you had a great high school career in football, track, and baseball. Of course, you were a key player on the football team before you gave up that sport last fall due to having multiple concussions, and then your teammates went on to win the Class 4A championship. I'm sure you were very happy for those guys, but it was kind of tough to watch them, you know, win a state title without you?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, obviously. I mean, I gave it up for, concussions and baseball. But, happy for them, but hurt a little bit.
Sure. Well, you were getting some recruiting attention for football before you made the decision to play baseball at Iowa Central. And I know you told me at that time that baseball was really your passion. And I know you did consider a few other schools. But the decision to go to Iowa Central, that was a pretty easy one for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep. That was, definitely easy.
So when do you report to school?
The 22nd of August.
That'll be here before you know it.
Yeah.
Well, yep. I assume your goal is to go there for a year or two and, you know, do as well as you can and then try to move on to a higher level of baseball, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yep.
All right, Kale. Well, hey, congratulations on a great career, and thanks a lot for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
You bet. All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. Gershman Mortgage is also a sponsor of the podcast. Gershman, the Midwest premier mortgage lender, is proud to be part of the Ankeny Fanatic Podcast. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home, vacation home, upgrade or remodel an existing home, or refinance your current mortgage, Gershman Mortgage is here to help. With over 60 years in the mortgage industry, they have security, experience, and unmatched service. You can visit their Ankeny office. Call 515-964-5952 or visit Gershman.com to get pre-approved today. Well, my next guest today is the head coach of the Ankeny squad. He guided the team to the state tournament for the third consecutive year, and the Hawks finished with a 32-7 record, the winningest season for the program since 2013. He is Joe Ballvans. Joe, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm good, Dan. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you bet. Well, congratulations on an outstanding season. I know it didn't end the way you wanted it to, but I'm sure you'd agree that one game doesn't define your whole season. You know, what was your message to the team after Friday's game?
Just to not hang their heads and to be proud of what they've accomplished. And Coach Baker and I talk a lot about, you know, to win a state tournament, you got to stay healthy, you got to get lucky, and you got to play well, you know, and, you know, we didn't swing it like I thought we would. We had to use Weston on Thursday, and we talked earlier about the Thursday, Friday, Saturday was going to be a challenge. I still like the arms we had lined up. You know, after experiencing that, that's you saw on Saturday, even two of the best teams in the state, deepest teams in the state, are still struggling to put high end, the lineup doesn't change, but the high end pitching after you've played, I mean, grinder after grinder after grinder, especially you went through PV's games. But so the message was, guys, you know, I'm tremendously proud of you. One of the best groups I coached for a long time and never even come close to having that much condensed talent in one class with those dudes. And we've been through a lot of battles together, and it was time for handshakes and hugs, and I don't know much else needed to be said.
Sure. Well, we'll break down a lot of those things that you just talked about, but before I do that, I should mention that you lost your grandmother on Friday, Joe, and I know you're heading to the funeral either today or tomorrow, so I just want to express my sympathy to you. Was she a big sports fan?
Oh, yeah. Both my grandma and grandpa, they came to all my stuff growing up, and I've got a lot of cousins. My cousin Matt, who is an administrator at East Marshall, played on a state championship basketball team at Colo Nesco. My cousin Ted, my cousin Leah, we've all played different sports, but huge supporters growing up, and that was a tough pill to swallow on Friday morning. But she was 96 and had lived a wonderful life, and my little boy was playing in the Iowa games for baseball. The Sunday before was her 96th birthday, so I got to go say my goodbyes and give a hug, and I knew that with next week's schedule with the state tournament that might be it. So I was good to go with it. It was just, again,
it was her time.
Yeah.
Well, I should also ask about your assistant coach, Coach Boschke. I know he fell over in the dugout on Thursday and had to go to the hospital, and I don't believe he's at Friday's game. You know, how's he doing?
Coach is good. I checked in with him on Saturday. He, he just kind of fell back and hit his head and had a mild concussion. Again, I need to probably call and check on him this afternoon. But from what I gathered through communication through his wife, Emily, who's just a wonderful person, that he's on the mend and feeling better. But, yeah, that was also an interesting deal there in the dugout.
Well, and he's the guy, doesn't he call a lot of the pitches,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he does most of our pitch sequencing for it. And it wasn't we finished the game off just fine. And Riggsy does a good job of sequencing Weston anyway. So I just told Colin, I go, hey, bud, you're going to have to – I go, you just keep Weston rolling like you do on the next day. And we were fine. I thought that didn't impact us at all on Friday night. Again, I feel the pitch that Swanson hit to the moon, I was literally like 2 seconds away from saying put him on, and that's, you know, that one's probably on me. Holy smokes, that ball disappeared into the night.
Yeah, it did. Well, it's easy to look back at it now and second guess yourself, I'm sure. But well, there were so many good teams in this tournament. You know, if you replayed this tournament 100 different times, you might have a lot of different outcomes. I mean, look at Thursday's games. You know, you guys edged Waukee, you know, partially thanks to an unearned run in the fourth inning. You know, Cedar Rapids Prairie scored 6 runs in the seventh inning to beat Dowling. You know, and then on Friday, Pleasant Valley overcame a 3-0 deficit to beat Prairie, and they eventually went on to win the title. But, you know, any of those three games could have easily gone the other way.
For sure. Our game on Thursday was one of the most intense 7-inning baseball games I've ever been a part of. I don't know when in the state of Iowa you've had a dude out there going 97 versus a dude out there is going 94. All of them are throwing multiple pitches for strikes. I mean, it was intense in the dugout and intense between the lines. A great baseball game. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Dirks and the program that he runs out there in Waukee. He's one of my closest coaching friends. And we talked beforehand and we just said, you know, we both got good teams. We just hope we both play well and we put out a good ball game. And I think we did. There's just, everything gets magnified so much. When those guys are out there throwing the way they're, every little thing matters, whether it's a pass ball or whether it's a ball that kicks away, you know, a little bleeder that drops in there, a base you swipe when you're guessing a curveball count, you know, 90 feet all of a sudden becomes a huge deal. And that's what I enjoy the most is it fun to win 10-12 nothing? No, but finding ways to win ball games. When Coach Baker and I tried to put a game plan together, like how many runs can we score? We knew that at most we might get a hit an inning off of Jackson Wentworth. So again, we got 8.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't anticipating 8. We were trying to, how many runs can we score on 7 hits?
Yeah, I felt bad that I missed that game. I was just coming back from vacation, and I got back just in time to watch it online. And, yeah, just even doing that, I could tell what an intense game that was. Well, I know last week that you told me you weren't 100% sure that at that time that you were going to pitch Brody, but then you're kind of leaning that way, I think. But in the end, I mean, that wasn't a tough decision, was it?
No, it's not a double elimination tournament, Dan. So you can't worry about Friday until you take care of business on Thursday. And again, even on Friday, I kind of went back and forth. I'm like, should I see how Will – can Will get through the Dragon lineup a couple times, and then I go to Weston, and then you look at what a Saturday look like. You know, mm-hmm. I'd probably have to trot Dylan Schley out there, which Dylan could handle that. He'd go out there and compete, and Sammy Andrews and Easton Dunwoody and the rest of the crew. But I just looked back at it, and I'm like, man, if I left Weston at first base and we went out there and things didn't go our way, I think I'd have a lot of regret. So that was what kind of pushed me. And he was ready for it, and I know he wanted another crack at him too. Can't win if you don't score. And that's kind of what I told the boys. The Pemble kid just tossed us off-speed pitch after off-speed pitch and throws just hard enough to keep you honest with the fastball. I thought he did an outstanding job. They had a game plan ready for us, and he was successful in his execution.
Well, going back to Thursday's game, I mean, that obviously turned out to be the right choice, you know, to pitch Brody, because you needed a great effort by him to overcome, you know, the strong outing by Wentworth. You know, it's just unfortunate that Brody reached his pitch limit after 6 innings. I know he had some walks. He felt like he wasn't getting some calls. And then you had to go to Easton in the seventh and eventually to Weston to get the final 2 outs. So Weston did throw 9 pitches before, you know, making the start the next day against Johnston. Do you think that brief outing had any effect, you know, on his performance against Johnston at all? I mean, he just didn't seem to be quite as sharp as usual.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you ask a guy to heat it up 2 days in a row, he's not going to be, what he normally is. But Weston's a tough kid, and he was up for the task. And I don't – if you were to ask him, he'd probably be like, no, I was fine. But, that's the tough part is with even Weston and Easton throwing 9 pitches, they only had 16 pitches, and then they were done for Saturday. So all of a sudden, my 6 arms that I planned on throwing in the state tournament, I'm down to 3 to get through,
mm-hmm.
Or 4 at least. When Weston threw that 16th pitch, I'm down to 4 arms to try to get through the rest of the game and Saturday. That's what, going back and saying the Thursday, Friday, that's really tough to then roll out there on Saturday. And we still had dudes that could go out there and give us a really good effort. But, man, if they stay with that format, you're going to have to probably bring as many pitchers as you can with you to Iowa City.
Well, you mentioned the home run by Swanson. That gave Johnston a 2-0 lead in the third inning. And, and although the game certainly wasn't over at that point, you guys were never able to get anything going against Pemble. And nobody's been able to shut you down, like he did. And I'm sure you guys tried to make some adjustments, throughout the game, but he just seemed to have an answer for everything. He ended up throwing 75 of his 115 pitches for strikes. He was just really on top of his game, wasn't he?
He was very sharp. We had some opportunities early in there where situationally we just didn't come through. And that happens. They're high school kids. They're not robots. They're going to make mistakes. We're not playing a video game here. And again, I thought early in the game, if we could get 1 or 2 and make them chase us, that game probably plays out a little bit differently. We just, again, we had runners in scoring position early. We weren't able to put a number up on the board. And I think that kind of they were able to take some of that momentum that they gained on the defensive side of the ball and up on the bump and really kind of transition that out to up to the plate. And their bench has great energy. Coach Barta gets buy-in from every single one of those dudes, whether they're the guy that takes the bucket and throws balls between innings or the guy that leads the cheers in the dugout. They're all in, and they have their bench is also in their crowd. I mean, they are an intense group over there, and he gets buy-in in ways that I have never ever seen another coach get buy-in. It's impressive.
Well, they have 80 guys in the dugout, so they can make a lot of noise, can't they?
Yes, that is correct. That's.
You guys averaged nearly 10 runs per game during your 19-game winning streak, but you scored just 3 runs in the win over Valley in the sub-state final. Then you were held to 2 runs by Waukee and, of course, to none by Johnston, so you scored just 5 runs in those last 3 games. Do you attribute that solely just to the quality of those pitchers that you were facing, or do you think your team maybe just finally cooled off a little bit after just being so hot all year?
Again, going back to Valley, the Parizic kid pitched similarly, but from the right side to what Johnston did to us,
mm-hmm.
right? Move the ball around, stay away, make him hit curveballs and things like that. And it wasn't like we were not working on that. Again, it might be a combination of, yeah, we cooled off a little bit. We ran into some really good pitching. I think when you are in a winner-take-all baseball game, that pitching is the difference maker, right? So, like, if I got to win one baseball game, I'm gonna take my chances with Brody Brecht on the hill. But if you don't have a guy like Brody Brecht and you got to go through a lineup like ours, you have to game plan to be like, okay, we can't just feed him fastballs. Even a fastball away probably gets hit hard somewhere. And they did. Teams did a really good job of pitching against us in the postseason, and our guys grinded and battled and fought. Even in our post, I think we were still 8 hits off of Wentworth. I think we had 9 or 10 against Valley.
Mm-hmm.
It was just we kind of got spread out. We weren't able to get that boom, 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 5 or 6 in a row, go hang a 5 spot and let somebody chase us. And that's kind of been what we've done all year is get out, hang a 2, hang a 3, hang a 4. Okay, now it's 10-0. Try and catch us. We just weren't able to get that rolling.
Well, somebody was asking me earlier today, about the regular season when you guys just cruised to that conference title and you had so many games that were lopsided and not to disparage the teams that you played, but some of those teams struggled throughout the year.
Yep.
And you probably hadn't seen a lot of pitching like you faced later on. I mean, do you think that was a factor?
Jeff Bauer and I talked about that on Sunday afternoon. And I do. If you play in that other pod, the Johnston, Southeast Polk, Dowling, Waukee, Urbandale, I can't remember. I always forget one of them. The pitching that you're going to see there, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday might probably looks a little different if you're at Marshalltown on Thursday. I don't mean to disrespect, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
So yeah, I think if you go through that grind, I think you saw Valley at 19-19, they were ready for us and we were, you know, hadn't lost a game in a month. Mm-hmm. So, when we move to that new league and after next summer, that's going to be some battles every single night. And you're going to, I talked with Coach Hartman the other day from Southeast Polk and he's like, man, when that league comes together, you're going to have a whole bunch of state tournament teams that are going to play well in the postseason because they're all battle tested, but also there will be teams from that league will be able to grind out a state tournament because they've been doing it all year.
Well, you mentioned how stretched those pitching staffs were on Saturday's, you know, championship game between Pleasant Valley and Johnston. And I know you had told me that you thought you weren't sure that Pleasant Valley had enough pitching to hold up. So how surprised were you by that outcome?
Well, going into Saturday, I thought that was probably a coin flip. I'd heard some things that the Lindmark kid who went in to pitch mm-hmm. might have not had I didn't know how well his arm was feeling. I knew that Johnston had Jake Wolver who'd finished the game before us, but other than that, you know, he's got a lot of young guys in the bench there that he can bring in some sophomores. I had the game on, I didn't have the volume up, so I couldn't tell you who he brought in after Wolver. But again, it was going to be, I thought it was going to, the first team to hang a great big crooked number, I thought would win. And you saw PV was able to go, they went back and forth a little bit, and then PV just went boom.
Right.
And that is what makes it tough there because everything gets magnified and it's really, really in that environment. I think it's really hard to play from behind. It's loud down there and it's just, you know, I think high school kids, if you can make another team have to chase you above a grand slam so where one swing can't beat you, that's a tall task in a state tournament environment.
Sure. Well, if you guys had somehow managed to come back and win that game Friday, like you mentioned, you know, your staff would have been stretched pretty thin too, but I'm sure you would have taken the chances with the guys you had left, huh?
Absolutely. Between, you know, we still would have had Easton and we would have had Sammy, who again, Sammy had some, he had some non-pitching hand issues. He had a little accident earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. And then Dylan Schley, who's one of our guys that we depended on all year. We'd have been able to piece it together with those three. I have all the confidence in the world in those guys. But again, we'd have had to gone out and score, which we hadn't done. You know, we'd have needed more than two or three to
right.
win that ball game. And that would have had to have been the message. And again, I had a great time these past 4 years with that group. It's tough to see them move on. You almost feel like your kids are leaving the house and going off to college. It's kind of a strange feeling.
Oh, for sure.
But it's again, they need to move on to bigger and better things. You can't be a high school kid forever. So
oh, for sure.
I will miss them, but I'm also looking forward to the challenge of how do we, you know, keep Ankeny baseball towards the top of the mountain in 4A. And I'm pretty proud of where we've been and what we've built it to, but to stay up there is the new challenge and look forward to that.
Well, yeah, when you look back at some of the things you guys accomplished this season, you know, it really was an amazing year. Like I mentioned, you went 20-0 to win the conference title. And I don't care who you're playing, you know, in your conference, to never have an off game in 20 games just shows, you know, how good this team was night in and night out, doesn't it?
Yeah. All three facets, probably the most, other than 12 and 13 had some of the same characters. They could pick it. They could swing it. We broke a school record team batting average. And pitch it too. I know Brody set a school ERA record.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're on Thursday night and you're in Fort Dodge and your guys you're running out there are Will Johnson and Sammy Andrews or somebody. I mean, that's just so deep, especially in conference play when you look at what you're going against on the other side. And the defense, we just talked to a guy, Cale Boyd, who plays center field for any other team in the state. I mean, he is elite defensively. I know he didn't have the year offensively he wanted to have this year, but he is a menace on the bases. And even when that ball went up and he took a misstep and slipped, and again, my heart went up a little bit, but I've seen him run under more baseballs like that than I can count, whether it be in practice or be in a game. There was no doubt. I mean, an average high school outfielder probably doesn't get back to that ball. he was there with like 2 seconds to spare and just caught it and fell to the ground. Like, I think he was just a little bit relieved that,
right.
that he could find it. Was some strange sky on Thursday and Friday. It was hazy. They had that air quality thing. And the,
right.
And so it was a little different. There were a lot of balls that went up that I didn't see right away until it started to come back down. But, yeah, I've had so much fun with them. I hope they know that I wish them all the very best and success in wherever they do. And I'm thankful for all the contributions that they've poured in to Hawk baseball.
We had 5 players named to the All-District first team, Brody, West, Jace Bauer, Colin Riggs, and Ryan Crandall. Cade Summers was selected to the second team, and he joined those other 5 guys on the All-Conference first team. And then you had 4 more players on the All-Conference second team. You had Will, Kale, Carter Smith, and Tamden and Webb Tate. You know, I don't believe any of the All-State teams have been announced yet, but, you know, I've got to believe that you have 3 guys who would be no-brainer first-teamers in Jace, Brody, and Wes. You know, I could see a couple other guys maybe being second- or third-teamers. You know, this team just had an incredible amount of individual talent, didn't it?
Yeah, it's, like I said earlier, it's as much condensed amount of talent as I think I will see for the in one class. I could coach for a long time, Dan, and not run into that. We've known that since I saw them play as 7th graders. I went out to watch the Warhawks play, and I'm like, yeah, I go, there's some really, really high end pieces here. And usually as 7th graders, that's kind of hard to see.
Right.
But they look the part as 7th and 8th graders, and they are, you know, they look like, we don't look like a normal high school baseball team when we walk off the bus, but that's a tribute to the work they've done in the weight room. They're all multi-sport guys. That's one thing that I'm really proud of is heck, I got a bunch of dudes that are going to play college football that were willing to stick it out and play ball for us one more time just because they love doing it and they love playing with each other.
Yeah, everybody knows about Brody and all the attention he was getting before the draft. You know, and you've said many times this season that you coach for a long time and you'll never see a pitcher, you know, like him again. But then you look at the offensive numbers that guys like Jason West put up this season. And I'm not sure if you'll ever coach another hitter like either of them, you know, either. You know, has it sunk in yet for you that this is the last time that you're going to coach these guys?
Yeah, it's been tough. Friday was hard. Saturday morning was tough. Sunday was better. We turned in uniforms on Monday, and again, I got to give handshakes and hugs, and it's time to let them go. It's time for them to go do bigger and better things, and for me to figure out, you know, I'd say that all the time when Jace is out there making backhand plays and flicking it across the infield. I go, you know, we're going to miss him next year, Coach Baker. We got to figure out who's going to stand out there next summer. He goes, yes, we will. But again, that's for another time, and I probably just need some time to look back and enjoy what's happened and just appreciate all of their contributions. Because, yeah, I mean, the 6 first-teamers, and I think in all conference we had Brody and Weston. You don't see that very often. Both first-team pitchers. And,
right.
And I kind of went that way because I wanted Will – I thought Will deserved at least a second team all-conference, and he had a tremendous senior season that probably flies under the radar because of all the other names. I can't even – I think he was like 7 or 8 and 1 off the top of my head. Just guys contributed all over the place, and we asked them to change some things as seniors. We went away from traditional signs, and we moved them to number systems. We started calling pitches, and we hadn't done that in the past, and they were just whatever it took to get them – as close as they could to a state championship, they were willing to buy in, and that is what makes it fun. That's why you coach, is to see these guys play at the highest level of high school baseball and just buy in with whatever you ask them to do. I mean, we even changed the way we do BP. We start hitting 2 dudes at a time at the dish to be more efficient, and we also, you know, shortened our practice time down. We went from, you know, 2.5 to 3 hours, where if I got to 2:15, we just pretty much shut it down, said, hey, guys, we're going to go again tomorrow. I just hope they know that I'm really proud of them and I value their contributions. And they have set the example of what I expect and what it takes to keep Hawk baseball near the top of 4A.
looking ahead to next year, you know, I know things are obviously going to be different, but you obviously feel pretty good, you know, about some of the young talent coming up in the program. You told me that. Do you think you guys might be, you know, better than a lot of people, you know, expect you to be after losing so many great players?
I do. I feel really good about there's a couple of the younger guys that are down that will be sophomores next year that we might need to take a look at. The junior class is good, is very, very, you know, we've got a couple of guys' last names that you might recognize, and there's another Watson coming through and things like that. So that's the fun part for me is to, again, where do the pieces fit? And I couldn't tell you what it looks like right now if you made me write it down. But I'm also really proud of, like, you take a look at a kid like Ryan Crandall, right? First basketball, baseball, football athlete since Brent Jones. That started for me, at least from what I can remember. And that he has, you know, we put him in the eight hole and he hit his way all the way to the cleanup spot. And just a tremendous year. He's just such a good athlete. And he, you know, I put him at third, I put him in left. He's like, I ain't played outfield since I was a freshman. I go, you figure it out. And he does. I mean, he had a line drive at him. He just pop up. Left field's one of those spots where you either catch it or you go get it off the wall. So it's not like it's super complicated, but he has had a great attitude. We're going to need him to lead. We're going to need Tamden to lead. We're going to need Dylan and Sammy and Easton and a lot of those junior arms that are junior now to lead by example and act like they've been there before, because they have. A lot of those guys have been in my dugout since they were sophomores, and they know the expectations, and they know that I expect – the leaders of the group to say, this is how things work around here, so I don't have to deal with it. And they'll get it. They're great. And they've also had to play roles that they, on a normal high school team, they'd have been, you know, hitting three hole or hitting lead off or being a number one or two starter. But they've had to, you know, they've had to watch some of these guys like Weston and Brody and Jace and Kale and Carter and, you know, just complete their high school careers. And I appreciate their patience, but now it's time to go. You know, what's the next chapter of Ankeny baseball look like? And I guess we'll find out.
For sure. Well, Joe, before I let you go, I just wanted to get some quick thoughts from you about our favorite team, the Minnesota Twins. Oh. I've had to be in therapy because of the season they're having. But, you know, they were in sell-off mode at the trading deadline last week. They sent Nelly Cruz to the Rays and Jose Barrios to the Jays. You know, what did you think of those moves? I mean, they almost had to do it, didn't they?
Yeah, I think everybody saw that one coming. I saw Baseball America rated their moves as A+. So if they got some good minor leaguers, I guess you and I can just wait for another 5 or 6 years till they can go get beat by the Yankees again in the playoffs.
Exactly, exactly. Right. Well, you know, this team was expected to contend for the AL Central title this year. You know, where did it all go wrong?
They didn't address the bullpen at all, at all.
Yeah, the moves that they did make certainly didn't work, did they?
No. I mean, again, I know Taylor Rogers was an all-star last year, but can you really – the year he had before that, can you really count on that guy to be your guy? I'm not a professional baseball scout or anything like that, but I thought the glaring issues were all – I thought their starters were okay. They were good enough to get you there. Mm-hmm. I still – Barrios has some – he'll be really good. He's not quite there yet. But, I mean, the bullpen is just almost borderline atrocious.
Yeah, I was going to say garbage. Yeah.
So I – when you just ignore that – and. Unfortunately, in today's Major League Baseball, relievers have become really expensive, right? To spend $5 to $6 million on a guy that throws an inning every other day, that is hard on what that payroll looks like. So, and I think that's why you see teams going all in on like Drew Irvin got drafted from the Hawkeyes because they're drafting velo so they don't have to pay for it later. And that's the big trend is we'll work on your feel, we'll work on your off-speed stuff, we can change some delivery stuff, but man, if we don't have velo in the farm system, we see what we see up north in the Twin Cities, because they don't. Or they sent their best one to the Dodgers.
Well, the way the game has gone now, I mean, the starters typically only throw maybe six innings, and they bring in three guys that each – throw 100 miles an hour for an inning each. Just so if you have a lead after six innings, a lot of times you can hold on to it. The Twins can't. But could you see a guy like Brody down the line? I mean, could he be one of those guys that comes in, throws an inning, and just blows people away?
Yeah, I think the plan, from what I've been told, and again, the plans change all the time. I think Brody's been communicated that they plan for him to be a weekend starter in Iowa City as early as next year, which he could do that. I'm sure plans change. That's
sure.
Brody mentioned that to me the other day. But Coach Baker, who has been all over Brian Baker, who's my assistant, he came up from Indianola this year. He reminds me all the day when Brody's out there throwing. He goes, Joe, isn't it amazing that every major league team has four or five of him on their roster, and they got three or four at AAA, and they got two right. or three more at AA. He goes, think about that. And he's got a good friend that works down at Dallas Baptist, and he spent time at the University of St. Louis and some time in Kansas JUCO ball. He's like, you know, I've seen dudes that are in the big leagues pitch at the college level, and he says that – he goes, I've never seen anything like Brody Brecht on a baseball field. So I think Brody gets it too. I think he's going to go over to Iowa City and have his football experience, but I think he knows probably where his opportunities are going to come from 3 years from now.
It'll be fun to watch for sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited to watch it too.
Well, hey, Joe, thanks a lot for all your help this year. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the conversation today.
Thanks for everything, and thanks for all the coverage of Hawk baseball. We really appreciate what you do. You do a wonderful job.
You bet. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients, you're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We are constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, my final guest today is a realtor at Coldwell Banker who has been on the podcast previously a couple of times. He is Tom Butler. Tom, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Hey, you bet. Well, I know the last time you were on, you mentioned that you'd have a big announcement to make on your next appearance, but we can save that for the end of your segment here. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is the Cubs, because I know you're a big fan. You know, what did you think of their, you know, moves at the trading deadline? Did you expect them to be in sell-off mode?
Well, I got to be totally honest. The market has been so crazy. It's been hard to follow closely what's been going on, especially when they're on this slide. You know, you don't have the motivation to go watch. But after the trades happened and I looked at what they did, it seemed like, as painful as it was to see those guys go, they had some good solid reasoning for what they did, and hopefully it's for the betterment of the organization. It may be a pipe dream, but I like them talking about the fact that the doors are all left open for those three guys. That they could come back. For them to go ahead and make the trades now and get what they could rather than wait for free agency and then not have any control at all makes a lot of sense. Now, it'll be curious to see what happens in the future, but to see one or a couple of those guys come back would be awesome.
Well, I thought I saw a comment from Rizzo maybe this morning where he mentioned that, you know, hey, there was a reason why none of us had signed, like maybe none of them wanted to stay, so I don't know that any of them will come back or not, but maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just part of a negotiating plea.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think probably so. I think that the organization was in a tough spot, and because of the performance of the organization with those guys there, it's hard to make the offers probably that they wanted to make. If things were humming along, it probably would have looked a little differently. I think they needed to shake some things up. They needed to get some new blood in there, and hopefully for these three guys, it looks like they're doing just fine. They all three go out and homer in their debut with their new club. So hopefully it'll be a positive for everybody.
Well, we were speaking with Ankeny coach Joe Balvans here before you came in. We were talking about the Twins because that's our favorite team. And I understood the moves that the Twins made because they're so far out of contention. And it certainly made sense to get rid of a guy like Nelson Cruz is at the end of his career. But with the Cubs, I guess I just didn't understand it because they still have that nucleus and they're not as far out of contention as the Twins are. And it seems to me like they could have kept those guys, and they have the money certainly to do that. They're a big market team, and maybe add a couple of other pieces around them, and maybe they could still contend with that group. But I don't know. Obviously, they went for more of a long-term build. But
yeah, I think that they looked at this year, and they said, okay, there's virtually no chance we're going to make the playoffs this year. So what can we do to start that rebuild now? we don't really know what the discussions were with those three guys and you know, the possibility that maybe they would come back. Again, it might be a pipe dream. Who knows? But it's tough to invest a lot in an organization's underperforming when they've got the talent that the Cubs have.
Well, Tom, you mentioned how crazy the market has been. You were here in late June, I believe. You know, has much changed since then?
You know, it ebbs and flows a little bit. I checked this morning. Inventories are up just a touch. They had been down around 1,700. We're up around 2,000 right now. So inventories are up just a little bit, but not enough to really notice. It's still a tough market for buyers. Builders are doing everything they can to get some houses built and to get some inventory out there. But the demand continues to be really, really strong.
Well, I just read an interesting article yesterday about one of the newest trends in the housing market, you know, and that involves the Wall Street banks buying up family homes across the U.S. at a rapid pace as the prices have soared, and they're kind of betting that a permanent increase in remote working following the pandemic will keep demand for suburban houses at a high level. You know, so basically the banks, you know, would become the landlord who would try to make money, you know, off renting the property. Have you seen much evidence of that in this area?
I haven't, not at least not in the Ankeny area at all. All of the closings that I'm seeing are, you know, owner-occupied, people buying it for themselves. That's probably more of a trend maybe in some transitional markets where people would move up to a Minneapolis for a couple of years and then move on. The type of companies that have a lot of moving their people around, that might make sense.
Those banks are always looking for ways to make money, though, aren't they?
Buddy, you know that's true.
Well, my wife and I took a quick trip to Florida last week, and I heard a crazy story about the housing market down there from an old college buddy of mine who we stayed with one night in his neighborhood near Cocoa Beach. You know, he had a neighbor with a house that wasn't even on the market, but he had a guy show up at his door one day who told him, you know, he would buy his house for $550,000 cash on the spot. And the guy didn't even believe him at first, but I guess he ended up, you know, selling it. And I mean, that's just the way the market is right now, right?
Yeah, I've got a friend here in town that owns a house in Florida, and he just bought it not too long ago. Somebody approached him. They wanted to pay him almost double what he paid for it. And he said, what do I do? Well, then he has to go find something else down there. And I've got another friend that's wanting to do a 1031 into a investment property down there. And it's rough to find anything that's reasonably priced.
Well, I've got an aunt that lives out in California who's thinking about moving back to Iowa. You know, she's got a house out there that, you know, she can probably sell for, you know, $800,000 or a million maybe. You know what the market in California is like. And she wants to maybe move back to like a small town in Story City. Well, in a small town like that, would there be plenty of properties, you think?
Oh, there are some properties, but, you know, the difficulty if she wants to be in that price point, there aren't a lot of houses in a small town like that.
Right.
In that kind of price point.
But well, she knows she can get a lot more house in Story City for
absolutely if you can find one is the thing, because even in a Story City, which, you know, people that work in Ames, you know, live in Story City, the nice houses are all taken.
Well, last time you were on, I know you talked about some of the developments that you're working with, the Kimberly developments. Do you want to talk about them again?
Yeah, which leads us right into the big announcement.
Well, yeah, we've made them wait long enough. So what is the big news that you wanted to share?
Yeah, the big announcement is, the home show for 2022, next summer, is at Kimberly Estates here in Ankeny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a big, big deal. The home shows have been down a little bit. We had the COVID home show this year down and coming. Was a little bit of a smaller home show. The anticipation is the home show next year here in Ankeny is going to be a big one. It's going to be really, really special. Kimberly Estates is the community that we have on the north side of town. Homes are starting in the 600s and going up from there. Just closed on a home, a custom home out there. Beautiful home. We've got a spec home being built at 950. I've got a couple of other homes that we're speccing out. They're going to be around 1.5. So if somebody wants to build a higher-end home in Ankeny, Kimberly Estates is really the place you want to look, because it's gonna be a special place. It's got additional requirements for landscaping and uplighting and all those things, so that when you drive into the neighborhood, you're gonna know that you're in a higher end neighborhood.
Well, I was just reading today too that the average sale price of a home in the U.S. now is up to like $360,000, but I'm guessing in Ankeny it might even be higher than that, huh?
Yeah, when you talk about averages, you know, it's probably right around there. But yeah, I mean, now if you're going out and you want to build a 1,800 to 2,000 square foot ranch home in Ankeny, that has some nice finishes in it, it's almost impossible to do that for under 500,000.
Sure.
And it's very easy to go over a million.
Well, you mentioned the home show for next year. Now, are there firm dates for that yet, or will that be determined later?
Yeah, the dates for that are on the Home Builders Association website.
Oh, okay. All right, Tom, is there anything else you wanted to talk about before I let you go?
No, I just, the only other thing I would say, we talked a little bit about Kimberly Estates right across the street. If you drive up Delaware, you'll see that there's a lot of dirt moving just north of the Otter Creek Golf Course. That's the future home of Kimberly Crossing, which is going to be a community for villa homes and some bi-attached, as well as some townhomes. All Kimberly product, all Kimberly quality, but they're going to be reasonably priced and in a great, great location. So we're excited to see that community come online either later this year or the beginning of next year.
Well, why don't you give your contact info again if somebody's interested in learning more about those developments?
Yeah, I like to keep it simple. My email is my name, tom@tombutler.com, or you can go to my website, tombutler.com, and get more information.
Good enough. All right, Tom. Well, thanks a lot for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. I want to thank my guests again for coming in today and giving me some of their time. I'm not sure if we'll have a podcast next week or not. We're kind of in between the summer and fall seasons now, and the golf season really won't get going for a couple of weeks yet, and then the other sports will be following after that. So I'm not sure if we'll have one next week or not, but we might come up with something. If we do, we will certainly let you know. So come back either next week or the following week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.